That got the thumbs up from the man. You know what I'm referring to. Yeah, Jacob, chairman of the board. And it is. It's his show. Producer's choice, busted pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. And truly Jacob's choice. He chose not to have Johnny involved in this episode. Jacob, thanks for giving me the exclusive for this one, man.
Well, Tim, I'm glad to have you here. I don't know if you've ever seen The Twilight Zone. Have you watched?
The black and white ones?
Yes,
that one. The new ones?
Old Twilight Zone. That's where I'm drawing my inspiration from. If you remember that, there's a little boy who, if you anger him, he can wish you into the cornfield. And that's what I've done to Johnny. He upset me, and now he has been wished into the cornfield. And thankfully, Tim, you have been completely compliant with my outrageous hosting orders, so it's worked out.
I appreciate that. And, you know, I'm sure that the farmer out there where Johnny is appreciating Johnny being out there because it is corn harvesting time right now. So, you know, good hands. Or as they say, you know, Johnny will not have idle hands, therefore he will not, you know, do the work of the devil.
He's going to be doing the work of me, where I sent him out to get my corn ready for the next producer's choice. But, Tim, the good news is, even though Johnny's not here with the aforementioned corn, you and I are here, and we're going to have a great time, I feel, on this show.
I love this. And, Jacob, I don't know, maybe it's something about Johnny not being here, but I'm really not nervous. I mean, I'm kind of feeling foot loose and fancy free, as they say.
I thought I was making you nervous with all of my hard-hitting journalistic investigative questions, but I guess maybe it's just you're afraid that, you know, Johnny's not going to like your answer or something.
Maybe deep inside, I think he's judging me.
I get that. Yeah.
I spend a lot of time obsessing about assuming that anybody else who's, talking to me is also engaging in some form of negative judgment. So,
well, the good news, Tim, is that we're here on the Producer's Choice Show, where the audience gets to judge you for half an hour. So here we go.
For Choo Choo Producer, Jacob's Choice, Chairman of the Board. Ow!
You now have two choices.
Chairman of the board, Jacob.
Ow! Jacob, chairman of the board.
I bet the board is spelled B-O-R-E-D.
We choose to go to the moon.
Life's full of tough choices, isn't it?
You chose poorly. Oh.
Dr. Tim. Man.
Jacob. Producer Jacob.
Thank you so much for being here on this exciting episode of the Producer's Choice Show. And now I can finally reveal the actual reason why Johnny's not here tonight.
Okay.
And it's because every week on this show, I invite subject matter experts onto this program. It's very important to me to have the best of the best come on. I've had a lot of really great guests on the Producer's Choice Show. And this week, I thought, this is a subject for Dr. Tim Slecker. This is one I want all Tim, all the time.
Nice. That's why I'm here. That's why I'm here.
Jacob. Welcome, everybody, to the Star Trek-themed episode of the Producer's Choice Show here on Busted Pencils. Dr. Tim Slecker, we're going to be talking about something I know that you know a lot about, Star Trek.
Yes. Nice. And you, you got that right, too, Star Trek. I always get the people like, oh, you're like one of those Star Wars guys. I'm like, don't be commingling Star Wars and Star Trek. That doesn't mean I'm a Star Wars hater, though, Jacob. It's just don't commingle.
I think you're absolutely right, Tim, because I would never commingle Star Trek and Star Wars because I like Star Wars a lot more. But nice. For the purposes of this, I've got a Star Trek expert here, and that's what we're going to be talking about. And, Tim, I don't want to just talk about Star Trek in general. Because after all, we are an education-based show. Even on Fridays, we try to tie things back into education as best we can, no matter how much fun we're trying to have. Tim, I've got a pretty simple task for you. Today, I'd like you to present me with three Star Trek episodes that you would show to a classroom to teach kids some information. And we can talk about them. You can tell me about these episodes. Because, frankly, I don't know anything about Star Trek. But you can look through your Rolodex. Tim, it's a casual one. It's just you and me. We'll work on it.
All right. I got one right away, though, Jacob.
Boom.
I'm not truly the Trekkie type of person. You know, I haven't gone to a convention. Not that I wouldn't, but I just haven't gone.
You're more of an unconventional Star Trek fan.
So, like, but I'm not like one of those, you know, encyclopedia type of indexes. Oh, you're talking about episode 4 in season 5 of Next Generation. And no, you know, but when you're talking about probably one of my absolute favorites that, well, back in the day, I would have shown it.
Okay.
I think today I might be inviting a little bit of chaos. Potentially Moms for Liberty might not be happy, but there's an episode where all of the villains and this is the Next Generation, all of the villains are on this kind of scavenger hunt to solve this deep mystery. So you've got the Klingons, you know, you've got the Romulans. You, of course, then have the Federation, which is made up of all kinds, but for the most part, you know, they represent humans.
And for the noobs out there, the Federation are our good guys with Captain Kirk and Spock and guys like that. And these are other alien groups that they interact with.
Or Jean-Luc Picard, as we're talking about specifically here in The Next Generation. And so throughout this 2-episode drama, through this maze of this incredibly gifted kind of, you know, oracle, they're on this quest to get to what is going to be kind of like the apple on the fruit on the tree of knowledge, right?
Okay. It's
got all of the secrets. And actually, though, they interpret that to mean the gift of incredible power that would give them the ability to, you know, not worry. So if you're a Romulan and you're worried about Klingons and the Federation, if you get this knowledge, you won't have to worry about them anymore.
Okay, so is that right? That's the setup that basically...
That's the setup.
They have heard that there's something out there that, once you get this, you won't have to worry about your problems.
This is the solution. This is super intelligent AI.
Gotcha.
Right? They get it. Anyway, it gets to the point where they all show up on this remote, distant planet, and they activate, of course, there's, you know, an orb. Because there has to be an orb. And they get the orb activated, and they all get there simultaneously to do this. And the out of the orb comes a video recording of a life form that had existed millions of years before the current humans, Romulans, and Klingons, and saying it was us who brought you here this moment to see what it was that we did. And what they did was this kind of like volcanic planet that they're on. And in that volcanic planet that they're looking, this, you know, this image that's there tells them to look down. And as they look down, they see, you know, like some lava, some slop, some what appears to be water mixing. And points out and says, right there, that moment when those three substances mixed, commingled, life was created. And from that moment, all life, you Romulan, you Klingon, you Federation, are all the result, all evolved from this single moment of life. I thought that was probably one of the most profound episodes. To illustrate particularly this concept of for me, it's that, you know, people are like, oh, you're trying to teach religion. I really wasn't. I understand now too how somebody would be like, oh my God, Slecker, you're trying to turn them into atheists and or some form of evolutionists. And I'm like, well, I mean, if they get there, they get there. I'm not telling them they have to. But it was that concept of going, what if? And the idea here is to illustrate what we see as differences in appearances, in cultures, in ways of life, that if you strip that all away, you come back to kind of a singularity moment where we're all the same. Jacob, that's probably one of the most profound episodes that I would have taught back in the day. And boy, I'd love to try it again today. But, you know, with the cover of some form of like an iron dome that would keep out, you know, Moms for Liberty.
Yeah, Tim, when I hear that, I can see what you mean, thinking about the aspect in which, oh, it's due to, because this is a biological origin for life, it might be precluding a religious explanation for origin. But the point of it seems to me to be something that, whether you're religious or agnostic or an atheist, you could see an aspect of truth in this, which is common origin for people who have disagreements. You know, you can take this from its sci-fi context and bring it back to Earth and say, at the end of the day, we have all these distinctions and divisions amongst human beings, but we share a common origin. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, Tim, that's something that anybody can get behind, as long as they're not getting distracted by the particulars of the science fiction based scenario.
Science fiction based scenario, or, you know, the whole idea, you know, it's very, I guess you would say, anti, young Earth creationism.
I suppose, yeah.
And so a young Earth creationist could take this episode as a very direct challenge to their way of seeing the world.
And nowadays that is like 60% of Americans, I believe. just joking, Tim, but yeah, I can see what you're saying. That does seem like a positive message, though, to get out to kids. I mean, the idea that it's a commonality, a brotherhood amongst living creatures. I would hope that at least most people could see a version of that story that is good.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's and so for me, it's the moral story, Jacob, that I was going for. You know, I was trying to bring out some character. So that would be number one. What else you got?
Here's my second question, Tim. That's a good story from Star Trek that you think you would like to bring to children and learners and educators and the educated of all ages. But what's a Star Trek tale that you felt personally inspired you or influenced you?
Personally.
In those dark moments of the soul, Tim, what do you look back and see Dr. Spock doing and say, I can do this if Dr. Spock got through this episode?
Oh, I was, you know, fully inspired to learn the Vulcan neck pinch to
that is a good
actually as kids we all would always, you know, be like, I finally figured it out, come here Jacob, and then I'd do it and then you wouldn't fall down and I'd be like, darn, I didn't do it right,
so close.
It's just, oh, if I'd have got that lined up, boy. Me inspiring my own, okay, I'm going to weasel a little bit out of this as I'm trying to grab the particular episode and go. Actually, to me, one of the reasons I just enjoy and really admire all the entire series is because while it's science fiction and things like that and futuristic and aliens, actually all of the stories, and Gene Roddenberry even said this, was that his main goal wasn't to create science fiction. He was using science fiction to illustrate that there's something about humans that we have this proclivity to, when we're given situations where the ability to allow everybody's individual talents be the main things about what it is that they bring to any situation, that you know, grabbing of again people's best parts is truly a uniquely human condition, and it's, there's kind of an aspirational, inspirational behind every kind of Star Trek episode that kind of brings that sensibility of teamwork, but maybe even a utopian idea of teamwork, of going, what the best of me is what they want here. And typically when the worst of me shows up, it's forgiven too. And that's where it's kind of utopian. So I can have a knockdown, drag out disagreement with you, Captain Jacob. And once you give that final kind of, I hear you, Tim, but we ain't doing it, then I go, well, then I'm good.
Yeah.
And we don't dislike each other after we then do that. We just forget that. That's the way it works. So that's a long way of getting around, probably, to me, it's probably the very last episode of Next Generation where, inspiring because, Captain Picard comes and gets sick with some kind of, it's like a psychological dementia type of disease where it has him literally shifting between time periods. And it's, he exists in the present, and then all of a sudden he finds himself in the past as the start, you know, not as a little kid, but, and then all of a sudden he'll shift and find himself in the future. And what happens to be, what seems to be a sickness, is actually really a condition of recognizing if you can hold three distinct realities in place, that is actually how you get to the solution of the current problem that you're facing in the present. And so, but it was only the ability to say, you're not sick. There's a reason why you keep shifting to the past, because you didn't learn something in the past that you were supposed to learn. There's a reason you keep shifting to the future, because the future is the way it is because of what you didn't do in the present. And now it requires that ability to see all three parts of that come together. And that actually is the last episode where my favorite villain, non-villain Q, sets up and saying, this was the trial of humanity. So Star Trek, The Next Generation, starts off with episode one, where they meet Q, which is this weird alien, because Q is, and people are listening and be like, my God, that's weird, is an immortal type of God type of alien being. And they meet Q for the first time, and Q sets them up in this situation where, if humans are so darn good, I'm going to create a scenario where I guarantee, your, all the bad parts of being a human will surface. And in that first episode, they managed to overcome their human, you know, weaknesses. And so the very last episode of Star Trek, The Next Generation, Q shows up again and says, the trial had never ended, Jean-Luc. It was always, constantly a test. And today, you finally did pass the test.
Tim, as an extremely conservative religious person, I'm very upset with you, because I see philosophical questions being raised by this episode of Star Trek, The Next Generation. And I don't like that. I like science fiction with freaking laser beams attached to sharks. That's the sci-fi I like. This seems to be talking about the nature of the human condition, the ability to accept the past, live with it, accept that it's part of who you are, and see the future clearly and work to, this is all way above my head. I like Wookiees ripping arms off in my sci-fi.
And you know, that to me, that's kind of the gift of Star Trek over Star Wars, is that it does have some of those cool lasers and spaceships and moving through all these things, but there's always this human condition story And, you know, that is profound. You know, are you going to ask me another question or are we?
We've got a quick question to wrap things up, Tim. I just want to quickly touch on this because it's a big part of Star Trek from the beginning with Gene Roddenberry, who created Star Trek. Basically, and correct me if I'm wrong, the idea is to present a positive version of the future where humanity has worked out its own problems and we can start exploring the universe. That's basically the idea.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to have that dichotomy between the very progressive motivation behind Star Trek and then that issue you addressed at the beginning where you said, well, in the 90s, I'd feel comfortable talking about some of these Star Trek episodes, but now I'm not so sure. And I wonder, do you just have any general thoughts on the nature of time and the way that progressive thoughts one day are now behind the times? I mean, Star Trek really is a demonstration of how our culture has changed since the 1960s.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, think about what, you know, I've thought about this in ways, and so I'll take my own advice when I said think about it, is that, you know, if you'd have seen the 60s and, you know, through the early 70s and then the Next Generation reboot in the 80s and, you know, then the next one after that, Deep Space Nine, and you know, it just keeps going. And it's continuing, though, what you said, Jacob, this kind of progressive story. I'm not saying that things were bad all along those times, but it kind of kept getting forward where you thought, yeah, we're making some progress, progressive, right? And slow down. No, we're not. And actually, I've thought about this from a historical standpoint in a way of trying to look at, quote, you know, movements and how shifts occur throughout time during, you know, our human history. And, you know, as Johnny always says, history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. I also think there are interesting things when we're talking about, you know, the march of ideas. And I think that what we are witnessing today isn't necessarily a progressive loss as much as I see that this is a counteroffensive or, you know, the counterattack of a conservative way of life and values that kind of said, you know, and felt that the progressive view was just too much and too quick. And now we're seeing, you know, a very, what some people may say is, my God, it's extreme. And it almost has to be because it's going to then also, I think, lose some of the hard-edgedness of it because it's too much, right? And so it's this push and pull that actually is progress, which progress isn't linear. It's a pushing and pulling. And so asking me to look at it that way, and I'll just quickly throw in, reminds me of one of my other favorite Star Trek episodes of actually, Jacob, where this is this very thing that you're pointing out is fast forward. So exploring the galaxy, when we finally get our poop together, we actually then find while we're doing that, that there are civilizations that, you know, didn't follow our timeline. And in fact, they're still maybe in like a rural agrarian setting, some of these worlds. And but, you know, we still want to study them. And so we make ourselves look like that alien and then we go and live amongst them, kind of like a traditional anthropologist. And in one of those episodes, Captain Riker got hurt and got taken to a medical facility and they took the prosthetics off and went, oh my God, what is this? And he at that moment, he had to kind of reveal himself. And there was a person there who was trying to push the boundaries of saying, we're not alone. And Riker takes him up to the ship. He's like, oh, okay, great. Comes back and he starts trying to change people's minds. And it's too much. Society is not ready. for this such a profound shift. And in fact, one of his supporters of this guy who's trying to proclaim the new word actually puts him down and just says, "You're right, but we're not ready."
That's another one of those things, Tim, that I think we may view differently today. Now that Riker is culturally appropriating in order to blend in with right? an alien planet, we may not approve of such things now. And I know that this is the producer's choice show, not the producer's opinion show. But I'll just say, Tim, I think when it comes to the long curve of progress in throughout history, I think progressives and liberals set the direction of society, and the conservative forces determine how fast we can handle getting there. And I think they're both probably necessary parts of society and history. Tim, am I getting this right that Star Trek: The Next Generation is your favorite Star Trek series?
That's my favorite series. I will say that actually, when I watch each new rendition, mm-hmm. I find them all very good.
Very good, Tim. And I think you're going to be able to answer. Let's go! In 60 seconds, Tim, given that you've talked about only one show this whole time, we know which one's your favorite. What is your second favorite incarnation of Star Trek?
My second favorite is Star Trek Discovery, which actually came out, I think, around 2019, 2020. And it's great because it uses Commander Spock. But he shows up in a different time frame in a whole different situation. And in this version, we're introduced to Spock's sister, who ends up becoming the lead character on all of the episodes, Star Trek Discovery. And very quickly, they get rocketed 900 years into the future by some mishap. And so then they are the ones who have to get used to living in a 900-year advanced future, in which, guess what, Jacob? Guess what happened? The Federation, over those 900 years, the Utopian disintegrated.
Oh, great. Well, thank you, Tim. This whole episode got me thinking that things can get better, and now I know that in 900 years... it's all going to fall apart. So that's wonderful. Tim, Dr. Tim Slecker, thank you so much for being on your own show. It's always a pleasure to have you here.
And thank you, Jacob, for taking Johnny and moving him out to wherever he is. Johnny, we hope you're enjoying the corn.
Johnny, you get that corn. And Tim, I think we've got time for one last thing.
Now it's time for your moment of zen. I started studying history with one view in mind, to look for answers to the issues and problems I saw in the world about me. Thanks for busting pencils and listening to Producer Jacob's Choice. Great episode. Hey, and if you want more, make sure if you're hanging on, hey, every Monday, homeroom, every Wednesday, classes in session. Yes, Jacob is here every Friday for Producer's Choice. And don't forget, every Saturday, you can tune in for 1 hour of your favorite blue-collar scholars, Tim and Johnny, and keep busting pencils.